You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Unfortunately, we're back talking about E15 once again.
Tim Lust is CEO of the National Sorghum Producers.
Another colossal missed opportunity to support an American first domestic industry that's adding value. And so very frustrated about that situation. By the same token, now that there's a study committee, now that there's a process, we just jump back in again. We keep pushing. We keep fighting. We're not going to quit. We're not going to go away, and we'll get E15 done.
Lust speaking after the House failed to include year-round E15 availability in legislation. But biofuel policy is moving back to the forefront as U.S. Ag and the White House prepare for a final decision on blending mandates. President Trump inviting industry leaders to Washington to finalize renewable fuel standard quotas for 2026 and 2027. It's a move that's expected to influence fuel markets and crop demand heading into planting season. Now, policymakers are weighing higher blending requirements and year-round E15 expansion against refiners' concerns about fuel cost. At the same time, farm groups say stronger ethanol demand could support corn markets amid weak grain prices and elevated input cost. Regionally, though, producers across the Midwest watching closely as policy outcomes could shape acreage decision, basis levels, ethanol plant margins, all ahead. Private acreage estimates point to a shift towards soybeans this year, offering an early look ahead at USDA's prospective plantings report, which comes out March 31st. Allendale chief economist Rich Nelson estimates corn planted area 93.678 million acres. That would be down about 5.1 million from last year. Soybean acreage 85.6 million acres, roughly 4.4 million acres higher. Slight reduction in wheat acres 44.8 million. Now, Allendale's survey implies corn production near 15.693 billion bushels. That's about 62 million below USDA's Ag Forum expectations, while soy output near 4.5 billion bushels would run roughly 78 million above. The wheat production, 1.8 billion bushels, modestly below prior projections. Looking ahead, though, markets will focus on USDA's March 31st prospective plantings report to either confirm or adjust private estimates. Proposed merger between Union Pacific and Norfolk Southern drawing scrutiny from ag groups concerned about transportation competition and cost. Farm shippers say consolidation in the rail industry could further limit options for moving grain, fertilizer, and other bulk commodities across rural America. Freight rail remains a critical link in the ag supply chain, especially for producers located far from waterways or major processing centers. U.S. railroads move tens of millions of tons of corn, soybeans, and wheat every year from the Midwest and Northern Plains to domestic processors and export terminals. And for many regions, rail service not simply the lowest cost option, but the only practical one. It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
So our point of view was the first several days we were fine. If we could get this war to a quick conclusion, reopen the strait, the impact was going to be very, very minimal. Prices should come right back down again because ultimately manufacturing plants hadn't really been impacted. They had place to go with their finished good. Everything was still flowing. And yeah, we lost some shipping days, but fundamentally speaking, the S&D did not really change. After that, we were starting to lose ground.
Josh Linville is vice president of fertilizer with StoneX.
There's no way of sitting there saying, well, how long until it gets bad? It's already bad. It's just a matter of how much longer does it go and how much worse does this market get. Your best case scenario is that we end this thing immediately. And unfortunately, ending immediately does not solve the situation. The reason being that you've got vessels, well, they've got to start running. They've got to start moving again. And they can do that on short order, but that takes time. Number two, there's only so many docks. There's only so many ports that these ships can load at. And it's not a quick process, right? It takes a couple days. Get the ship in, get it parked, get it loaded, get it closed up, get it pushed off, and get it flowing again. So you've got all these ships that have been sitting around. Well, now they've got to get there and they've got to start getting loaded. That's going to take time. The manufacturing plants have to get refired. They have to start running again. That takes time. So all of this to sit there and say, we've been stopped for long enough now, even if the best case scenario is you and I wake up tomorrow morning and this entire situation has gone to the past and it's safe passage through the Strait of Hormuz again, it is going to take a long time for this market to get back to normal. Again, I don't want to be sensational. If that happens, prices are going to come down. But a lot of the damage has already been done.
Of course, another key component of higher input costs, regulation. Administrator of EPA is Lee Zeldin.
Today, I'm pleased to make the largest deregulatory announcement in U.S. history. The Environmental Protection Agency is initiating 31 historic actions to fulfill President Trump's promise to unleash American energy, revitalize our auto industry, restore the rule of law, and give power back to the states. EPA will be reconsidering many suffocating rules that restrict nearly every sector of our economy and cost Americans trillions of dollars. Our actions include the Biden administration's deeply flawed Clean Power Plan 2.0, mercury and air toxic standards, Quad OBC, particulate matter 2.5, light, medium, and heavy car and truck rules, NESHAPs, and the so-called social cost of carbon. To advance cooperative federalism, EPA will partner with states that were universally rejected by the last administration's good neighbor rule. Among many other actions, today's momentous day also includes the 2009 endangerment finding, along with all actions that rely on it. I've been told the endangerment finding is considered the holy grail of the climate change religion. For me, the U.S. Constitution and the laws of this nation will be strictly interpreted and followed. No exceptions. Today, the Green New Scam ends as the EPA does its part to usher in the golden age of American success. Our actions will lower the cost of living by making it more affordable to purchase a car, heat your home, and operate a business. Jobs will be created, especially in the U.S. auto industry, and our nation will become stronger for it. From the campaign trail to day one and beyond, President Trump has delivered on his promise to unleash energy dominance and lower the cost of living. We at EPA will do our part to power the great American comeback.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
What he did was look at 30 years of prices.
South Dakota State professor and economist Eli Cossey on research from a teaching assistant.
He categorized years as one of three. Bear years where prices basically fall all year. So 23% of years were bear years. Bull years where prices were when they rose from December through November, just generally speaking, upward prices. Another 23% of years. Then we had our summer high. This was basically high price somewhere between March and July. Lower prices at harvest. If you're going to place a bet, bet on a summer high. 54% of years. Then what he did was analyze different plans, always comparing them to the baseline. So the baseline was don't hedge at all and simply sell at harvest. Then you could do 10% of your expected production December through July. So 10% every month, then do spot sales of 20% at harvest. Or you could do 20% December, February, April, and June. And again, we always just end with 20% of spot sales. We don't want to over-hedge and hedge more than we think we can produce. Same concept here. Hedge March, April, May, June. Finally, we got our April and May 10%, 20% May, 40% June. And then we only have 7 years of data for this, but he also looked into options. So basically buy 20% at the money puts March through June, buy 20% at the money puts and sell out of the money calls. In other words, you're building a fence. Okay. And then sort of a combination of futures and puts, or a combination of futures and fence. Baseline here, over 30 years of data, 336 for corn. So our first one, hedge 10% a month, December through July, you would have gotten 348 on average over those 30 years, which is higher. So here in the long run, hedging with a consistent plan would have gotten you more. We can do the same thing for this other version, slightly higher amount. So I'm going to focus in on the highest amount, 10% March and April, 20% May, 40% June, and finally, 20% at harvest. They would have expected, on average, to get $354 a year. Puts, not too surprisingly, didn't fare quite as well. But for people that are really afraid of losing out the chance to get a higher price, here, puts might make some sense. You're not going to get significantly better, but you're also not going to lose horribly from puts. So here's our bearish years. Essentially, bear years are when you would love to have hedged. Hedging would have gotten, example, 15.5% more than baseline. So definitely would have wanted to hedge there. Even your puts would have gotten you pretty good. Bull years are why people often are afraid to hedge. Bull years are my type 2 students being terrified that they're going to miss out on a higher price. And it's true. If you hedge in a bull year, you're going to not get the highest price. So, I mean, potentially huge losses, 16% less. That's massive. But keep in mind this, 23% of years are bull years, and we don't know what years are going to be bull years. So, bear years, hedging helped. Bull years, hedging hurt. The most common year, summer highs. What did hedging do? Substantial improvements. So, the point here is this, 77% of years, hedging will actually help. Hedging, even though you're going to lose out on 23% of years, hedging overall gets you that better price.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We've got trap ships, we've got higher insurance, we've got attempts to find supply of crude elsewhere. So prior to the invasion, the VLCC rates were around $230,000 a day. They have gone up to a theoretical $500,000 a day in the space of 48 hours.
Tom Binney is Senior Vice President of Ocean Freight at StoneX.
As of yet, I haven't heard any of particular fixtures being done, but clearly we've got a lot of disruption, a lot of inefficiency, a lot of vessels trapped. And so at this stage, owners are asking for very high rates to be able to move anywhere.
The U.S., though, has to import oil to refine it here. Doug Burgum is Secretary of Interior.
Kudos to Texas for being the first to add refining capacity and add refining capacity that works with our abundance of light sweet crude that we have coming from our shale plays. The flip side is, if you're living in California, you're living in a state that used to have 40 refineries. Now they've got 8. But because of the attacks that they're getting through, red tape regulation and basically overt regulations that are trying to drive them out of business. Chevron, Valero have announced they're closing refineries in California. They've got the highest gas prices in the country. You're going to only see them go up. California does import oil and refined product from other countries because they've stopped all the pipelines coming into their state. And they're not the only part of our country, but we do have some states that have basically followed these failed European policies. And they're going to experience much higher gasoline prices and energy prices than other states. And again, so you're going to take states like New York and California, and they're going to end up leading in one thing, and that's out-migration of Americans who are going to move to places where they can have affordable, reliable, and U.S.-made secure energy.
Tying it all together, though, Burgum admits we're seeing higher energy prices.
Well, we are seeing some short-term volatility in the market. A lot of that's driven by concerns over the free flow of navigation, through the Strait of Hormuz. And again, Iran as a country, they began their existence 47 years ago by taking Americans hostage, literally. And now, 47 years later, after the threat of taking the whole world economy hostage by saying we're going to block the free flow of goods both in and out of the Strait of Hormuz. This is something that we anticipated the terrorist regime would do. President Trump has been clear that he's not going to stand for it. I think you're going to continue to see this volatility as the markets react to news or non-news or information or misinformation. They're going to be reactive, but long-term, this is going to mean lower prices for energy for the whole globe. Definitely a win for the American people when President Trump, concludes the action that he's taking. Just like with Venezuela, the action that he took there, in less than an hour, transformed a country that was a sanctioned adversary into one that's now turning out to be a strategic ally. And of course, that is great news for all of our Gulf Coast refiners, because many of those refineries were designed 20 years ago to handle heavier crude, and that crude oil from Venezuela starting to flow back into the United States. And again, that's going to mean lower energy prices, lower gas prices for Americans. So again, President Trump, delivering on energy dominance strategy around the world for Americans. And again, that's why this new refinery, American First Refining, is perfect name for that new refinery.
It's Agriculture Today.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The Total Survey provides comprehensive data on the financial and demographic aspects of agricultural land ownership.
Chief of the Economics, Environmental, and Demographics Branch at the National Ag Statistics Service at USDA, Brian Combs.
Nearly 348 million acres of land are rented out, with non-operating landlords responsible for 276 million acres, or 79% of the total. The remaining acreage is rented by operating landlords. There are about 1.8 million non-operating landlords compared to 260,000 operating landlords. Ownership information is only available for non-operating landlords. These individuals were asked how many acres they own under various ownership categories, which included privately owned, trust, family-owned legal entity, non-family-owned legal entity, and other. Only 3% of all rented acres had multiple ownership types. Privately owned entities make up the largest share both of landlord numbers and rented acreage, with land held in trust ranking second. The number of owners is reported solely for non-operating landlord entities. Most non-operating landlord entities are comprised of two or more owners. This ownership data was introduced in 2024. Additionally, a new question in 2024 asked entities with multiple owners whether any co-owners were married to one another. Among those entities reporting multiple owners, 60% indicated that co-owners were married. Now let's transition to the economics of land ownership. In 2024, their land assets totaled $1.7 trillion, a 47% increase from 2014. Rent received was $34 billion, up 9% since 2014. Debt rose but remains low at about 3% of land and building value. Operating expenses cover production and ownership costs, while capital expenditures include land purchases and property upgrades. Most landlords own their land debt-free and have no recent capital expenditures. The Plains and the Midwest region combined have a 65% share of the total value of land and buildings held by landlords. Almost half of the rent paid is received by landlords in the Midwest region. The amount of debt owned is also highest in the Midwest region. As we move into this section of the presentation, a reminder that all owned land is made up of three components: land owned and operated, land owned and rented to others by non-operating landlords, and land owned and rented to others by operating landlords. Landlords and landowners were asked to describe how they acquired their land. Non-operating landlords most often obtained their land through inheritance. About 40% of owned acres came from purchases, which included buying from non-relatives, relatives, or at auction. Considering all owned acres, more than half of the total land was purchased. In 2024, a new survey question asked landlords and landowners to specify the most recent year they obtained land through each method. For nearly every method, most land acquired was acquired more than 10 years ago, prior to 2014. For each method, only 25% of landowners reported obtaining land within the past 5 years. Across all regions, less than 7% of land is anticipated to be sold or gifted. Non-operating landlords plan to transition 168 million acres through wills or trust and sell about 13 million acres to non-relatives.
Highlights from USDA's Total Survey. It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Heard a little bit about the weather conditions and also about the planting conditions across the state.
Mark Brown is Director of Field Services with Lubbock-based Plains Cotton Growers.
I think it might be interesting for your listeners to just hear about the weather situation that we've had across the state, and I got to experience that firsthand driving to San Antonio. You know, it's been a lot of wild weather across the nation over the last few weeks, and we've had a couple of passing fronts that swept through a wide area that caused a lot of concern, a lot of damage in some places, unfortunately. I left Lubbock Sunday morning, and as I left, the wind was picking up and a front was coming directly out of the north. And by the time I got to the edge of the Caprock escarpment, well, I could look in my rearview mirror and the skies were already red across the High Plains area. And I actually outrun that front. When I got to San Antonio, they had experienced temperatures as high as 98 degrees on this last Sunday. And then as we were visiting at the meeting, at the welcome reception, in an outdoor area, actually, whenever we got there, about 8 o'clock, the front hit. And so, I experienced weather in San Antonio that went from 98 degrees down to this morning, it was 34 degrees of temperature. So it's just amazing how the weather can change in our state, in a short amount of time. And so, follow that up with some reports that I heard from across the state. I visited with one producer from the Stephenville area, and he told me that he had already put some corn in the ground, and he was very concerned about his corn and about what this cold weather might do to that. He said that he's been growing corn for about 5 years now, and it was interested in seeing what that situation would be like. And then also spoke with somebody from down on the Gulf Coast. And as you look at the Texas Drought Monitor right now, there are lots of yellows, oranges, and unfortunately a lot of red across the state. And as we look down in the southern part of Texas, we can see a lot of drought situation. And that is the report that I heard. The planting in a lot of cases is behind schedule because of the extremely dry weather, although there is some planting going on down there. And of course, in my area there in Lubbock, we're always in need of moisture. And I've talked with some crop consultants, and where they have done some probing, we are fortunate in that we've had a little bit of winter moisture, and in a lot of cases you can still find that moisture down a few inches in the soil moisture profile. But we really do need some moisture over the next couple of months to get us back in good shape and have a good soil moisture profile to begin with for our planting season, as that's coming up rapidly, and we'll be putting cotton seed in the ground within a couple of months.
And this is Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.